Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm happy to be on the line with Brianna Karusis again to talk some more about branding and communications and things. Brianna, before we get into the next actual formal topic for the Nonprofit Snapcast, I wanted to ask you, you know, we're in the middle of all this racial unrest, a lot of civil unrest is happening, and I'm seeing on social media a lot of folks are calling on corporate America to just to outright denounce police brutality and to openly say they support the Black Lives Matter movement. I've heard other whispers of the same thing being done in the nonprofit sector, that now is the time for all nonprofits to make similar statements. What do you think about that? Because, you know, we talk about nonprofit communications needing to be genuine and germane to a mission, and how then, given the current climate and what we're seeing, should nonprofits be sort of saying anything about Black Lives Matter? And if so, how should they say it?
That is a question that, you know, every organization, nonprofit or for-profit or, you know, not to presume, but mm-hmm. I, as an individual, small business owner, am grappling with that. I imagine you are, but it is a really challenging question because it really gets to the heart of, like, are there any missional or business objectives that outweigh the value and dignity of all human lives? And, you know, I'll be very frank. I went into business for myself partly because I wanted to be able to choose who I work with and what causes I support and promote. And so it's important. Social justice is an important value of mine. And I hope that that is the belief of all nonprofit leaders. That said, you know, I was listening to an earlier episode of yours with, I think it was Robert Drake, kind mm-hmm. of addressing this same issue. And I think he had a really good example that you gave of the, was it a river manager, someone in the environmental space, and how that messaging aligned. I think it, you know, I've been speaking with a few of my clients trying to strategize, you know, okay, how do we respond to this? And it's a very thin line between elevating a message that needs to be heard and aligning yourself and showing solidarity with a movement that you believe in and looking like you're exploiting the movement to get attention for your organization. So I think that Robert's approach of, and like you just said, making sure that whatever messages you put forward are germane to your mission. And, you know, if your mission conflicts with or doesn't align in some way with the idea that people should be treated equally and that the Black community and that people of color have been really and truly oppressed for hundreds of years, then that is a bigger question. And you're not going to have an authentic message if you are, you know, standing in solidarity and you are going to look like you're exploiting the movement because you're not backing up your words with actions. But it's my opinion that most organizations in the nonprofit sphere can find a way to not only connect the dignity of human life and the equality of all people back to their missions, but then also to really take a real look at how their organization functions and how it's executing its mission to make sure that that is actually embedded in what they're doing.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for verifying that. I like to ask the question to multiple people just to, to get validation and different perspectives. But you said something I think which was pretty important. And in my snarkiest moment, you know, you said that if the commitment to dignity and human life isn't part of your mission, and I wanted to complete that sentence for you. I wanted to say, if these things are not part of your mission, then you need to rethink your mission.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like there are probably people all across the country, across the world, who maybe are clocking in at a job that they're realizing maybe is at odds with their personal values in a way that they can't overlook anymore? And that's, you know, that's a question that goes way beyond messaging and communications, but
right.
It's just that's another layer of
Well, we may have to have
this transformative, that pivotal time.
Yeah, and I, it's, you know, transformation is often painful, and it hurts me that we're in the middle of it. But I'm hoping we come out on the other end of this thing for the better.
Yeah.
So, thank you for that. And we have roughly 12 minutes to go in our normal 15-minute timeline. If we want to do that, is that enough time to cover the anatomy of a brand?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
All right.
So how do we do that? How do we say that a brand is, or how do we explain that a brand is just something more than your logo and a mission?
Right. Yeah. So I think a lot of nonprofits come at the idea of branding from the way that they come at a lot of ideas that are typically associated with the for-profit world of it is an extravagance, or it is, you know, separate from our mission and not something that they need because they think it's a fancy logo and, you know, defining your fonts and colors. But there's a lot more to it. So I kind of separated into a few different broad categories. And one of them is, this is the most important one, and leading with this one, if you are in the position to try to convince your nonprofit to take a look at your brand, is your core identity. And that's essentially the foundation upon which all of your other brand elements are built. It includes your mission statement, your vision statement, your core values. I spoke in a previous episode about your positioning statement, but I will reiterate here. It is basically just what makes your organization unique and the value that it brings the people who you serve, or, you know, whatever mission you serve. And then having a clear understanding of your audiences. So, you know, in communications work, we always talk about your audience is never the general public. Who are you really trying to reach? And that can be several different groups, but having a pretty clear understanding of the specific people or groups you are ultimately serving, and then those people or groups that are the intermediaries between your organization and those people. So, you know, that could include legislators, or if you're ultimately serving children, then one of the audience groups is probably the parents who make decisions for those children, that sort of thing. And then this category can also include sort of boilerplate fundamentals like the organization's founding story or its history. So that's your core identity. And then from there, you build messaging and verbal elements. And that's, in summary, how your organization talks about itself. So that's your tagline. That's your rules for your name usage. So, you know, on first reference, we're this really long organization title. And on second reference, we're the acronym or a shortened version, just the rules around that. It's also setting your voice and tone. So developing a personality for your organization. And there's, you know, tons of good examples about how nonprofits can take different, you know, adopt a particular personality that regardless of the medium or who they're talking to is authentic throughout. This also includes the boring but important grammar and style rules that you adhere to. So are you committed to the AP style book or the Chicago manual? Do you use contractions? Are sentence fragments okay? You know, they support that voice and tone.
Right. There are days when I'm lucky to be remembering where to put the period.
right.
But yes, I get it. Yeah.
That's an authentic part of your brand.
No more run-ons. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So the other couple of components in that messaging and verbal elements is your vocabulary. So this could be, for example, if you're an organization that serves people in a medically adjacent capacity, are you always calling them patients or are you always calling them clients? What do you refer them to? And these choices may seem, you know, really getting into the weeds, but they really go back to those core values and things. So if you're trying to communicate a particular value and a particular agenda or position on how you feel about a certain group of people, the words you choose need to reflect that. And then the key messages and brand stories is the other part of that. And again, I spoke about that in the previous episode that I joined you on, but those are really the key themes, the key high-level themes that you identify that all go back to supporting that positioning statement or that value proposition that you had before. And from those, you can generate lots of different stories and messaging. Mm-hmm. And then finally, and this is kind of the tip of the iceberg that most people who don't know a lot about branding think about branding, is the visual elements. So those visible signals that a brand exists. Seth Godin, I love this quote. He says, "It takes more than a hat to be a cowboy." So that hat is your logo, but just the logo isn't going to make you who you purport to be.
Yeah.
So that's the bucket that includes your logo and all its variations, your color palette, your fonts and typography, any, you know, iconography, your photography style, anything else a designer might need to know to maintain a consistent visual identity for your organization. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's maybe to some people it seems frivolous, but that really is the quick reference guide for people in, you know, how they feel about you and whether they trust you and whether they see you over and over again as a consistent, reliable brand. So that in a quick nutshell is the anatomy of your brand, and it's a good checklist if you're doing an audit to see where you're missing things.
I like it. And you have this on your blog, isn't that correct?
Yes, I do.
Where can people find that?
That is at collective-reach.com. You can click on blog or you can click on the little search icon and just type in branding. And I have a whole series on branding topics that include this post.
I like the idea of describing it as brand anatomy in terms of establishing the core identity and examining how the organization talks about itself even before you get to the visual elements. That sort of falls in line with something I've said to people who are trying to start nonprofits, and I keep reminding them there's a lot more you need to do before you even develop that logo.
It's like trying to get dressed before you have a fully formed skeleton. It's not a good idea.
Right, exactly. Once you have that down, let's take a look at an average nonprofit or imagine an average nonprofit, whatever that means. If they have, you know, they have started business, they've got a revenue stream, they're functioning, they're delivering on their mission objectives. What kinds of things should they be looking at to make sure that they have the skeleton where it needs to be before they get involved in things like logos and websites and stuff like that?
That's an interesting question. So you're saying like kind of in a startup situation, or maybe a nonprofit that hasn't deliberately built any sort of brand.
I think startup might be useful for this purpose. And I may not be asking a fair question. I'm happy to go back and edit this out if it ends up going down a dead end. But yeah, a startup is what I was thinking of.
Okay. So for a startup organization, a lot of those conversations that you're going to have that really build the core foundation of your brand, your mission statement, your vision statement, those are going to be, you know, they're going to come as a matter of course in developing the organization. So really, the buckets are really steps. So you should not, and I know it can kind of feel like a chicken or the egg situation, like you need a name, and your name is part of your brand. So some of those things, of course, are going to come before, put the cart before the horse. But in general, you really should move pretty fluidly from having that core foundation to then developing your positioning. Mm-hmm. Bless you.
Thank you.
You're developing your positioning and your key brand stories, those kinds of things, your voice really. And then from there, because in general, that verbal section, the positioning and your voice and your personality, that's really important to have before you start building visuals. Because if you decide that you're a very playful, lighthearted, irreverent type of organization, but the logo that you have is, you know, navy and red and it looks like a bank logo, those are very much not in alignment. So You want to make sure that whatever you are visually signaling has already been defined. So yeah, right. I would really encourage you to work, you know, bottom to top. And you don't have to hire somebody necessarily. I know there's a lot of people trying to do a lot of really good work on a shoestring. You don't have to hire a branding firm to do this. I put together a bunch of free resources on my website to help people, you know, do that audit, figure out the audiences that they're talking to and what's going to resonate most with them, and to really start to build that skeleton and then to flesh it out on your own. And, you know, ultimately, you may not be a graphic designer. You might want to engage someone with that. But if you can deliver them the background for them to like very authentically represent your organization, that's going to be huge in making sure that you're getting the most bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at your free resources page right now. It looks like there's stuff here that any board member could easily get into.
Yep. Yeah. And I'll be honest, I haven't updated this free resources page in a while, but the blog also has a lot of stuff linked to it, and it's all free.
Yep.
There may be a subscription wall here and there, but for the most part, I have tried to be very deliberate about sharing the resources that I use to work with clients with broader audiences, because I know not everyone is going to be able to engage with me, but...
Yep. No, Rihanna, this is beautiful stuff. As we did last time, please tell folks how they can find your podcast and how they can find you as a consultant if they desire.
Sure. So if you want to hear a little more candid version of me, I started Social Distance Happy Hour at the beginning of the pandemic shutdown, and it is just as my life is now. It's a very nebulous blend of work and personal and good conversations with interesting people. And so you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, it's called Social Distance Happy Hour. That's also on Twitter at Distance Hour. I don't have a very strong social media presence with that because I have two kids under five. But it's there. And then you can find Collective Reach at collective-reach.com. And I have a contact page there if you want to get in touch with me directly, or you can tweet at me at Rihanna K. Writes.
Awesome. Thank you. I can't wait to check out the podcast. Rihanna, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great to speak with you, Mickey.
And to our listeners, thanks as always for joining us. We value your feedback and suggestions for future episodes via the nonprofit snapcast.org website. And in the meantime, we hope you and yours are staying safe. We'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.